Hi, my name is Chelsea Morley, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon is a production focused on the why of business, media, and marketing. It's made by my team at Neural, a digital agency for challenger brands and talent. To learn more, just visit neural.com. That's N-E-U-R-A-L-L-E.com. My guest this week is Chelsea Morley, fabulous person, founder and creative director at Tiny Disco. We'll chat about kids in a moment. First thing I wanted to ask you, though, is did you ever meet Sandra Sully?
No.
Really?
I didn't meet Sandra Sully.
Fuck, that's really disappointing.
Wait, I think she might have been at a Christmas party and I was too scared to talk to her.
Damn.
The reason you're asking is because my dream was to become Sandra Sully.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't ever get to speak to her.
She was based in Melbourne though, right?
When I came on the scene, she was in Sydney.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was Helen Kapalos and Steve Quatermain, Mal Walden.
Yeah.
George Danikian.
Yeah.
Do you remember him?
George Danikian, I remember him.
So they were the Melbourne crew. So Sandra was like national bulletin by that stage.
Yeah. So that was, I didn't write the actual dates, but let's say 2012 to, you were actually assistant chief of staff for news. So, yeah, you would have been around them up until like 2015-ish, right?
Mm-hmm. Wait, did you say around them or a random?
Around them. Sorry.
I was definitely a random.
I've got a weird sort of, Lauren reckons I've got a weird like Victorian accent where some words sound the same.
Well, that was the perfect example.
Yeah.
Around them.
Like
yeah.
how do you say Ellen? Like the woman's name.
As in Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
Ellen.
Yeah. Ellen.
Wait, that's like the meme. Ellen.
Yeah. Right?
But how you can't say Ellen and it'd be like Elon.
Ellen.
But Ellen, Ellen.
Ellen and Ellen.
Ellen, Ellen. 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 Yeah. Did I do it?
What about if you pay someone's salary versus their eating salary? I know they're meant to
what
sound.
What is this play school? Salary. I'm going to pay you a salary.
Yeah.
I'm going to crunch some celery.
Yeah.
No, I'm just changing the tone. No. Nah. Salary, okay.
Yeah.
I think there's not everyone says them the same.
Yeah,
that's not
but apparently
you.
It's a more so a Victorian thing. Like if you would go to other states and they have a, you obviously have broad Australian accents,
yeah.
which is like
yeah, yeah.
The crocodile hunter, but then you have, I don't know what they call it. It's either a modern or like a Cate Blanchett type accent. Then you can hear that distinction in other states, whereas in Victoria you can't. Don't know why.
South Australia definitely has a little
yeah, they've got
twang.
Like a English sort of
yeah.
royalness mm-hmm. about them. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
speaking of language, as a kid, what's your earliest memory?
One of my earliest memories is waiting at the school bus stop and because we lived on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
In prep, waiting for the big jangly school bus to rock up and a brown snake just slithering across in
Jesus.
Front of our feet as like a little five-year-old.
Yeah,
that was nice. That was a good memory.
Okay.
Another memory is getting stung by a bee in my mum's, in the garden of that same house
we lived in.
How
did you do that?
It was hard living in the country. I think I was picking flowers and then I stood on a bee, like the
Are
old classic, like stood
yeah, yeah.
on the bee.
I did a similar thing. I would have been like six,
mm-hmm.
but me and my cousin had this fucking brilliant game in our head where we were going to catch bees as pets.
It's always a good idea.
So my mum's got lavender bush at the front of the house and we're going up and be like, hey, I got a bee. And then the next thing I know, I was stung and it was horrific.
And were you like traumatized from that from then on as a kid? Were you like terrified of bees?
I definitely was ultra wary of bees growing up. I think it's softened now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Lucky you weren't allergic to them.
Very lucky.
Further to that point, my dad was allergic to bees.
Really?
And he swallowed a bee.
Jesus Christ.
And it stung him in his throat. And my mum is like a superwoman. He was in a field farming. We had a hobby farm, so he wasn't like doing real farm things, but
yeah.
he was, I don't know, fixing a fence or something. Stung by a bee, could feel his throat swelling. Ran to the house, And we were like maybe 30, 45 minutes from any kind of hospital or town. And he couldn't speak by the time he got to the house. And my mum, like, he was pointing at his throat and she kind of worked out what was going on, opened his mouth and got tweezers and pulled the sting out.
Oh,
isn't
my
that
God.
Actually mental?
What the fuck?
And like arguably saved his life. Because the poison just stopped going in. It's crazy.
Dude, that's one
so
of
that's
the...
another early memory of mine.
Oh my God. Holy shit. Okay, so, wow, so many questions. How did he fucking get the bee in his throat? Because...
Would you like, I swallow bugs all, like not all the time, but often.
Okay, so like
a bug, it just flew in.
Because there was this
thing.
He wasn't
eating them or anything. Like,
I remember as kids, my dad was paranoid about this shit. You know how you drink Coke cans and there's like a wasp hanging around or a bee hanging around?
Yes.
He'd be always like, make sure you put something over the top of that can because you'll get a bee in there and then you'll drink it and it will sting your throat and you'll die. And I'm like, fuck.
This is also another, this is so weird. This is also another memory of my childhood was drinking out of hoses. Did you ever do that?
Yeah.
A bee flew out of the hose. They climb into little things. So it's true. Jeez. Your dad was right. More Holy so fuck. With soft drink because the bees just want some of that sugar.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I get that, but it's just like when you're that age and the exposure to like you're not because you think you're completely infallible. You don't even have a conception of.
Yeah, you're like, there's no bee going in there.
Actually, here's a question for you. What was like the earliest conception in your head of death?
The earliest conception was the harsh reality of my grandma dying and seeing her. So my mum's a very practical, matter-of-fact parent and educator. And so my grandmother died when I was 10. Mm-hmm. We were very close and my mum was very close to her. She was, the whole family was, I don't know if you've had a death in the family. I'm sorry if you have. But there's that process of once they've died, do you want to see, do you want to view the body?
Yeah.
And all of my family, like my cousins and all the young children, it was just decided no. And my mom just made this really, she just felt like I had to see her and have that understanding. And I still remember it. And I remember not being scared. I remember just having this utter understanding as a 10. I was 10 or 11. I can't remember exactly, but I remember seeing her and we just had this beautiful conversation about my grandmother. And then I just got it. Like I just knew where she was gone. I knew she was gone and I knew she wasn't going to come back. Whereas I think perhaps if it had happened when I was younger, it would have been a bit more confusing, but I don't think I really knew what it was until then or had a conception of that.
That's
like that's a huge thing to do, especially now as a mother, thinking if that I was confronted with that, your first instinct is to just keep my children away from everything.
Yeah, it's weird. Don't you think it's weird in Western culture? We're very scared. We put a veil
100%,
over death.
100%. Death, sickness, horrible situations, like people cross the road to avoid talking to you about that stuff or like, you know, like people, especially grief, people don't want to talk. And like I have friends who have lost their parents or my mum also lost her brother in a really horrific way. And she always spoke about how when that happened, the world went silent. Like people are scared to talk to you about the death of your loved one or the death. And maybe you don't want to talk about it, but it's just, even just a phone call or someone saying, do you want to chat? Are you okay? Or acknowledging it sometimes.
Anything that is emotional is genuinely scary to talk to someone about.
Yeah, it's really scary.
You know, we had a talent in yesterday who has relationship troubles and he was like the whole time at the point of breaking into tears.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's really, really hard. So, but yeah, but like for me, death was a similar thing, but I was probably five at the time. I was five. And it was my grandpa died and dad brought me into the room, but they'd kept him behind it was like a blind, but like a see-through.
So you could still see
there was
shape.
A body.
Yeah.
And
what did that do to you as a five-year-old? You do there? Where do you go?
It's so scary. Dad was like, do you want to go see him? I'm like, I could not move. So just imagine there's a blank curtain like this that you can't see through. You go through it and then there's like maybe 5 meters and then there's like a sheer curtain.
Right.
And that's where the body is or it's the body and
like
the coffin.
There's like barriers put in front of it which kind of separates
and
you
I was
already.
I just remember holding my dad like or his leg or something and just like I do not want to move from here. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when my grandma died, like it wasn't, I don't know, maybe that was something else that I'd been exposed to over a period of time or more mature or whatever. But, you know, dad and my uncles had taken photos of her. Like she was dead. She was in a bed. Like, you know, the nurses had tucked her in. And it was, I don't know, I just looked at the photo and I was like, yeah, she's dead. But it wasn't, you know, weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. Death's a weird thing. But it's part of life.
Death is like, I find, I'm not like obsessed with death, but I do find the whole process of like human nature around death very fascinating.
Yeah.
And I think there's so many cultures where they have such process around when a loved one passes. And it's just really respectful and they really spend the time with that person or with the, you know, providing for the people left behind. And I just think like there's a lot to be said for that. There's a lot 100%. Of space where that does not happen, where it's like, get on with your life.
There was a Netflix doco where this guy goes and investigates the way that people grieve through death. And there's so many weird and unique ways around the world, like this place in the Philippines where every year they bring out their dead who have been, I don't know, like they've obviously been injected with something over many, many years, so they're like preserved, but they're like sometimes skeletons, sometimes just like really skinny looking people. I can't remember the name of it, but it's fascinating. And they'll dress them up. Mm-hmm. And like, this is our great, great grandpa, Bob.
Mummy Bob. He's a mummy now.
He's a mummy now.
Why did you open with death?
I don't know.
That's a very like
death. I just opened with
my earliest concept of death.
But then when you spoke about the bee thing, I thought of death.
Whoa. Okay. We're there. I see. I see that connection you made with an everyday cute bug and death. Why are we laughing about death?
I don't know. It's it's funny.
It's Friday.
What do you think you were going to be when you were a kid?
I was going to be Sandra Sully. Like, yeah, I remember, I very distinctly remember it was wintertime in my childhood home and I just would sit in front of the TV, legs crossed, watching Sandra Sully, and I thought, she's just an angel. Yeah. She was my angel, and that kind of like instinctively set off the random, you know, meander through high school, uni, whatever, and then eventually weirdly kind of ended up in news and media without kind of like, you know, I lost that drive when I was 5 or 6. Sandra Sully was my queen, and then I kind of probably forgot about it for a while.
And why do you think in hindsight it was specifically Sandra? Do you think it was just because your parents watched Channel 10 news?
Yes, and she was on every day. Yeah, so okay. I probably just thought she was like the only newsreader in the world.
It could have been any female host with a bit of charisma.
Yeah.
If like your parents have watched 7 or 9.
It could have been anyone.
Could have been anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just loved her hair and I just loved that she commanded attention. You know? Like she told us what happened. She told us the tragedies and the happy stories too.
So for me
it's
it
a lot
was
of power.
Channel 7, trying to think back to who that was. I'm pretty sure it was
Wasn't it still like Peter Hitchener? Isn't it? Wasn't his name?
No, he's 9.
Is he 9?
Hitch
okay.
is 9. He's still there.
I should know that.
He's not doing as much. He's like 73 now.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting on. He's amazing. I love it.
Okay, Channel 7. You're a Channel 7. I think there's a lot to be unpacked between what station your family watched.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah.
So 7, right? So, okay, that's an interesting one. What was your like nighttime TV watching routine? Like for us, it would be Mum would put on 7 News, right?
Yeah.
And then 6:30, I can't remember, there was obviously a period between when we didn't have the shitty current affairs shows and something else. But then from when I could remember, maybe 8 or 9, you would have whatever Channel 7
was
show.
Friends on there? No.
Nah, but that's like you're getting into like 7:30 territory.
Okay, sleep.
So back. Like 6:30. Like, I know for sure my parents watched Seinfeld religiously every night.
My favorite show of all time.
Yeah. So that was probably
but was
on.
Was that on 10?
It was on 10.
Okay, great. Right, so I'm tripping out here.
They flick channels. But yeah, that was a consistent. Oh, Home and Away. We were never Neighbours people.
I was always a Neighbours gal. Okay. Toadfish for life.
Toadfish for life. Okay, interesting. Yeah. So
Madeline West for life.
It was always. Why Delta? Channel 7? I don't know why. Why
well,
is that?
Well, Home and Away, like you're either Home and Away or Neighbours, right?
But like why do you, yeah, I guess. But like, I don't think my mum really.
But Channel 10 had The Simpsons, Seinfeld, and I think that was where my first introduction to TV was like that. They were buffered together for a while, I'm pretty sure. Like 6 o'clock was Simpsons. Was there another news after that or something? I don't know. But we were, every night would watch.
Channel 10 didn't have that, but 7 and 9, like 9 had A Current Affair and, oh God, I remember this woman so vividly. She did the 6:30 version of Channel 7's A Current Affair.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there for like nearly 10 years. And it was, the production value was a bit higher than A Current Affair.
Okay.
But mum would watch that. And I just can't remember. It always comes back to me every now and then. I look up like, what's she doing now?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, she's like, she's 45. She's doing this. Like she's educated. I don't know. I can't remember her name, but I remember
she's educated.
Like she's educating people on like being a journalist now. Like she's
Are you talking about Tracy Spicer?
No.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, on the news for me, it was Jennifer Kite and the guy who's still there.
Jennifer Kite.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Jennifer Kite's still around.
She's on Channel 10 now.
Yeah. She left. Anyway. Seinfeld. And then you
iconic.
Then you're sort of getting into bedtime territory for me.
Yeah.
Like 8:30. Trying to think.
Agree.
What
I
they
was
would watch.
An 8:30 kid. Yeah.
My dad's a sport fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
And he like if there was something, well, both my parents are, but if there was something sport on, they'd be watching that.
Mm-hmm. Any sport. Like doesn't matter what kind
any,
of sport.
Like any show that was related to sport, that would be the show that's on.
Okay.
To rarely, rarely watch anything else. But yeah, like you get a Law and Order, stuff like that.
There's a place for that.
Yeah. Jag? Remember Jag?
Jag?
You remember
Wait,
Jag?
Was that the pilots or something?
So they were like in the military, they were like lawyers who acted like if you commit a crime mm-hmm. in the military, you're court-martialed and you go right. through that whole process. So they were like
such
lawyers.
An imagine trying to sell that in as a show. Like, we're going to be in the military, in the like, no one would, what, I'm
but
surprised.
The male lead at the time was a really big actor, like a really big TV actor. Mm-hmm. I just cannot remember his name. And he was like, he did a few movies every now and then. And I was obsessed with it. Absolutely obsessed with it. I always thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to go on the Navy or something. David James Elliott, Commander
Harmon.
I
need a photo. I don't know who that is. He's so hot. Look at that uniform. Show the camera that uniform. No one will deny that he's so hot. Wait, what photo is that?
This is him.
he looks a bit melted.
Look at this. Oh, my God. Look at this one.
Okay, he's hot there too. I'm into him.
Speaking
I should have watched Jag.
Yeah, you should have watched Jag. I remember I was like, I had a massive crush. Catherine Bell was like the female lead. I had a massive crush on her.
Mm-hmm.
She was huge in that era.
Yeah.
Actually, she was British. Fucking hell. There you go. British American. Speaking of hot old men, did you see on Instagram last night Tommy Lee posting basic, he was nude. Fully stuck.
Yeah,
naked.
I saw that.
Yeah. That's wild, right?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see the fully nude pic.
Yeah, he's just sitting there with his dick out. Unbelievable.
That's pretty. And why did Instagram leave it up? Because it's Tommy Lee?
It was left up for 4 hours. Don't know.
Wow.
Don't know. Anyway, I don't know how I'm going to segue from that into Tiny Disco.
Was it a tiny disco?
Yeah. No, the man's packing heat.
It was a massive disco.
Yeah, okay. It was a massive, right. massive disco.
I don't feel comfortable with this conversation anymore.
Just looking back at your TV career, so we've got 10, production assistant,
mm-hmm.
then assistant to chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
You're clearly in the same building as the project,
mm-hmm.
Roving Enterprises, associate producer, and then you were the Chase producer or morning
mm-hmm.
producer. So you've got
Did you get that off my LinkedIn?
Yeah.
Nice. Good reset.
3 plus 4. That's 7 years in TV land.
Well,
I've read many interviews, you know, you're on maternity leave and you're sort of starting to realize. I'm very fascinated about that. We'll talk about that going on mat leave a bit later. But what was the best and worst thing about working in the business?
In TV business?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I have a lot of answers to each question. The best thing was, I think it really formed the foundations of hard work.
Okay.
Like you go in as a junior cadet and you've got no time to fuck around. You are like hardworking or you're out, and there was no in between. Yeah. Like, I think when I first started, I went home in tears every night.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty extreme and stressful. And like, I started rolling the auto cue when the auto cue was still manual. So I was rolling the auto cue in the newsroom, like shaking. And it was really scary. You know, like, that's not a really big deal. You're just rolling some words for newsreaders who are very professional. But the pressure felt like, I felt like I had a ticking time bomb in that little auto cue. And you had to know the speed that the newsreaders read and do that speed. So best thing, foundations. I had a lot of fear when I worked there, which is probably not a nice thing, but it taught me hard work and resilience, I think.
Yeah.
And putting up with a lot. The worst thing is probably that too. I mean, at the risk of like, you know, dissing people, because I made a lot of amazing friends and there's a lot of amazing people working in TV, it was still a very old school backward way. Mm. So there was still a corner office with a news director who shouted at everyone, and a lot of girls and a lot of disrespectful talk around those women. Mm. And I was young and I was fresh and I was like wanting to please everyone. And you just kind of go along with that, knowing that, oh, we're kind of having a joke about her skirt, or we're kind of, you know, it was a bit of a sexist environment.
Right.
Which I doubt it's like that now. It wouldn't fly now. So that was probably the worst thing. And a lot of like people, a lot of like horrible situations where people weren't treated how they should have been.
Yeah, you can imagine end of year Christmas parties being pretty debaucherous, toxic situation.
I never experienced anything really bad at a Christmas party. I wish I had a great story, but no, they were pretty chill.
I worked at a corporate workplace and sort of like mid-2010s, I was there for 4 years, and I reckon at every party they would have an end of year and they'd have a mid-year.
Mm-hmm.
Someone must have been fired from something they did
at
one of those events. I remember one in particular. I was sitting there with the CEO, and this is a family-run company. It probably got 100 staff. And this guy who's a sales guy sack-tapped the CEO. And I was just like,
when is that ever a good idea?
The fuck were you thinking?
And did he get fired?
Yeah. First thing Monday, he's like called
in
the office.
Did he go to prison?
Oh,
like,
nah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Huh?
Did you see it?
I saw it from afar.
That makes it okay.
I saw it from afar and I
That's
thought,
not okay.
Holy shit.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah, I once had the general manager, who is a very flamboyant gay man, tell me in a group, I want to come on your face at a Christmas party. I was like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
This is...
What did you do?
Well, I was leaving like not long after, so I didn't fucking bother. Mm. And also they were part of the family. So it just goes to show when you're in a position of power, like that's when my mind awoke around that because everyone had been talking about that sort of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, right. This is what it feels like.
Mm.
So if anything, it was actually kind of a good lesson.
Yeah.
But yeah, enough about
how not to be, right?
But like what it feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty rare for like a white man, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You had a note about the maternity leave. I was so fascinating. I mean, you said, the minute I announced I was pregnant with my first child, I witnessed doors physically closed for me.
Mm-hmm.
Meetings I'd sat in for years were no longer in my calendar. Responsibilities were shifted off my plate, which I can see it.
Mm.
Now, do you think that was them worried that they're going to lose you and all this IP and knowledge is gone? Or do you think they looked at it differently of like, oh, she's pregnant now, she's useless?
No, I think it came from a place of trying to help me out.
Gotcha.
I think it, and one of my managers at the time is also like a close mate of mine now. We've actually never spoken about this. So I feel like after this we will. Hi, Tom. But I actually feel like, and I now see this as a business owner because when you're confronted with this, you invest a lot of time in people, they're suddenly doing a big job for you And all of a sudden it's like, okay, that's ripped out from under us. We've got to find a replacement. We've got to take all that work off that person. I think it was just preempting, like, I'm going on leave for what is going to probably be a year. There's no need for me to go to those meetings anymore. But it was confronting to me how quickly it happened.
Mm.
And I think it was a beautiful office. Like, it was an amazing place to work and I loved it and I loved the people that and the friends that I made there. But I think, yeah, I don't think it was intentional or it had like a bad...
It's just an assumption.
It's just like this thing that happens. Oh, she's pregnant. We'll take that off her plate and we'll, you know, and it's perceived to probably be a nice thing. But the fact is that just because I've got a baby growing in my womb doesn't mean that I can't do the work, which is a repeating theme across every industry.
Mm.
So, no, I don't think it was like, yeah, I don't think it was she's
useless.
Yeah. I think it was we've got to start that like process of getting a replacement in and taking the work off her and, yeah.
Because I can recognize that. I mean, I've seen it in workplaces.
You still see it a lot.
And I've always thought, is it, because people perceive it as like, oh, she's got a big workload and she's pregnant. But then like the one scenario that sort of bucked that trend was I remember I studied like accounting and finance because my dad was like, you have to do a profession. Did 6 weeks maybe of an internship at an accounting firm and fucking hated it. Mm. But there's certain things I picked up from that workplace environment. So there was a partner there. She was a female tax partner, an audit partner, and she was very pregnant, but she was like super, super busy. She would have been 8 months or something like that. And no one was telling her, hey, you should slow down. I remember thinking that and thinking like, holy shit, like this... Jesus, like this woman works fucking hard. Like it was crazy to me, but you know, I guess it goes to show you're not useless at all.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I do think more than anyone in that office, a pregnant woman feels like she has a lot to prove before she goes and has a baby because I could probably rally up stats on how many of my friends have gone back to work after having a baby and don't go back to the same job.
No, and that's because as well, like people, I've heard it in workplaces that people start assuming, oh, she's going to have another kid, so she's only going to be back here for a year.
Yeah, or you can come back to this role, but it has to be full time, which means you don't get to spend time with your child. And if your wishes are wanting to come back 3 days a week, then that job's taken off you, and you're given a 3 day a week job. Or there's a lot of work still to be done in that space.
Interesting, you say that, like full time and part time and being with your kids. You spoke about like the guilt almost, like feeling some element of guilt running a business. And you can tell the algorithm on things like TikTok know me way too well because it's starting to feed me like baby content and parenting content and stuff like that. And one recent one, which is starting to trend at the moment, is young, brand new mums. Like we're talking, the kid was born 2 months ago and having to go back to full-time work in America because it's just not supported.
America is fucking crazy. Horrific. America is, it would be traumatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a viewpoint that I've said it millions of times and it may offend people, but I personally think America's a bit of a shithole. Like little things like that should be standard in a country that wealthy.
Mm.
So anyway, that was the trend. It's very, very interesting. And this one video had like 5 million views and it's just of this woman taking videos of herself and she's just like bursting into tears, like just eating her sandwich and stuff like that.
Yeah. Because I think after you have a baby, there is not normal for a good 6 months after. Yeah. Well, there's a different normal that arrives, but like you're not in a good place. I'm just prepping you for it, right?
Yeah.
No, you're different. You are tired. And to try and juggle all of that, if you're feeding, it's a lot.
Yeah. It
8 weeks. 2 months is 8 weeks. You've known that person for 8 weeks and you're going to hand them to, it's really sad.
Do you
really hard
have any words of wisdom? If you and Stu were to give Lauren and I some element of wisdom that you would pass on running our business and having a kid, is there anything in particular you'd say?
Is Lauren listening right now?
she will.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I would say if possible, you need to work out what work can be delegated to one or the other. And I would say in those first few months, it's important that Lauren has space not to need to work.
Yeah.
But I would also say that it's important to balance the parenting and the parenting, but like the, it's very easy when a baby is born that the responsibilities fall straight onto the mother to obviously they're feeding every 2 hours and things like that. But I think it's important to like make space for each other as well.
Yeah.
And don't forget about each other.
Yeah.
I think sometimes in those early days, I would come up for air and I would look at Stu and I'd forgotten what he looked like.
Oh my
I'm like,
God.
What? Who are you? And he would say the same to me. And I think prioritizing sleep, like all of this is before the business stuff comes in, really.
Mm.
Like basic human, prioritize sleep, be together. Like don't feel like you have to bring every human and their dog and 17 kids in to visit your new baby. Like it's such it's such a precious moment.
Yeah.
From a business side, like you have a team, I would just try and delegate and try and give yourself as much space as you can.
Yeah. Try and not be in the day-to-day as much.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do at the moment is handing more responsibility, getting more people, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's daunting, but it's also so, I can't wait to be a dad.
That's like, really sweet.
I mean, growing up in a big sort of, you know, European family, like it's expected.
Yeah. How many siblings do you have?
I got two others, so it's three.
Yeah.
Actually, you might have seen my brother out there.
I did meet your bro.
He's now the finance guy.
The finance guy. Yeah. He needs a shirt, finance guy.
He does.
What does that mean? He does your accounting.
He just handles, like, it's just handling invoices and reconciliation and BAS and the accountants.
Mm.
It's too much now. It's funny because, like, he's doing actuary science as a master's at uni.
Which is what?
It's like business math science. It's insane.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
he's the right one to be the finance guy then.
but he also does it for my parents' business as well.
Oh, wow. I like his family business. Keep it all in the family. Yeah. That's why I had kids, basically.
Oh, do you like Succession?
I love Succession.
The best show
Stu
ever.
And I binge watched Succession and I just,
I said the line.
So many
like,
things.
I always anchor on like, yeah, we should have like five kids.
And make them battle it out.
Yeah. And then
did you watch it though and like start to, I found myself getting a bit like, angry businesswoman the days after I watched it sometimes because I'd like take on their persona.
Yeah, you take on the persona.
And it was so wrong.
But I also like recognize some of the elements of my family's business and our siblings. Like we're all, you know, my dad's at that stage of life where he wants to retire and he's getting to the point where he's bringing us in more to do certain things. Like he's using our business to start doing the marketing.
Yeah.
And
clever business model. Yeah. Your dad's clever.
So, and my sister who studied environmental science and she's like an ESG or like she's an environmental consultant and dad's business is like 99% recyclable.
Wow.
So,
that's impressive.
He wants to do like B Corp and a bunch of other certifications. He's like, she can handle that. And then
cool.
Hayden handles the finance and then
he's got it all worked out.
Yeah.
And then your baby can just be like, I don't know, the TikTok guy or gal.
But the back to the point of like anchoring on five, it's like, yeah, maybe we'll get like 2-3 kids. Like I say that just you're probably thinking, what a fucking idiot. Like
I just love talking to people that don't have kids. It's so cute.
Yeah.
In like 5 years, come back to me.
Yeah, come back in 5 years. But there's something about like watching Succession there is something about that. Like
oh, so many good juicy stories.
Yeah.
Like was it Tom? Tom? Was his name Tom?
That did what?
That was married to the daughter.
Yeah.
Was his name Tom?
Yeah, we can't go spoiling shit.
No, but he was like my favorite. He's my favorite.
He was the dark horse, one that I did not expect.
Iconic. All iconic.
I loved, what's the middle brother's name again?
The Roman. Macaulay Culkin's brother.
Brother, yeah. Roman?
Yeah. Yeah, he was Romulus. Just like loose unit, daddy's
and
boy.
And he sent his dad a fucking dick pic.
Yeah, that was amazing.
I was always, as being the eldest sibling, are you the eldest or the youngest? Being the eldest, I was always rooting for the older brother, but he just kept fucking up.
I know, but I still loved him.
He was great. Still is great. I'm so excited for the next season. Let's talk about your business.
Okay.
So, Tiny Disco.
Tiny Disco.
Feb 2017. So that to me, I have to say, was the most relieving thing to see the date that you had started this business, knowing how long you've slogged away to get to this point now. The reason
is it a long time or a short time?
5 years.
Is that a long time?
Well, you've blown up pretty quickly post-COVID, right? Like your profile, your business and everything.
Yeah.
You asked before, why did I interview you? Like, you came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, I saw a Tiny Disco here and Chelsea here. And I'm like, who the fuck is this person?
I ask myself the same thing every day.
But also, it could have just been that Sarah was working with you guys and we're just seeing her TikTok stories.
Maybe. We were in your realm.
In the realm, right? But to me, it's like you come out of nowhere. But like, 5 years, that's a decent amount of time, like slogging away. There was you even had a note here in one of your interviews where for a long time, it was just two staff. Right?
Yeah.
Now we got the tour. There's what, fucking 40 people? Something
28.
Like that. 28?
Not 40. Maybe soon.
You know what I mean?
28.
It's a big multiple.
It's good, yeah. So it happened pretty quickly.
For me, at least as a fellow agency owner, it was relieving to know I'm not completely incompetent.
Yes. Why?
Because you're reaching these heights and I want to reach heights.
That's really sweet, Jordan. Yeah. Okay. I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
See, I look at the opposite way. I'm like, 5 years has gone like that.
Yeah.
And if I look at the micro, on the micro scale, like all of that growth and everything happened in the last 2 years. So it's really like, I feel like.
It does, yeah.
I feel like it's been 2 years of just hectic craziness.
Yeah.
And the first 3 years were kind of just TikToking away.
When did you think you had that like inflection point? Was it a certain client? Was it a certain piece of work?
I think it was like a combination of things. I think we kind of decided that. Because for a long time we only did, because Tiny Disco was all, it all started with video, right?
Yeah.
I started filming videos randomly when I was on maternity leave. And then I think that just happened to be at that time where brands were starting to work out, oh my God, we need to do video. What's this video thing? So it kind of all came about. Cameras were getting lighter. So all of a sudden you could create really beautiful content with a camera that, you know, you didn't need a big Red or a big cinema camera to create something that was, you know? And then I think once we'd filmed a lot, the turning point was, a big client that took a chance on us and said, you can be an agency, you know, you're basically doing all the agency things. And I was like, what's an agency again?
So you were working as a producer or production house and then you realize you can actually own the account yourself.
Yeah. We were working predominantly as production house. And then a client asked me to do some creative, which I've always been super creative and I'd always been offering up like, we should just tweak this or we should just change it in this way. And then they gave me an opportunity to do it and we did it and we nailed it. And then suddenly from there, I just went, we can do everything. Mm. I need a lot of help, but we can do it all.
Yeah.
So we shifted from that pure production side to executing everything and it was the best move we ever made.
And that piece of creative, was that what, static imagery? Was it some branding?
It was a video campaign.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are a creative agency, but like when you look at the work you do, you would say that is primarily around moving image and content, right?
It started out mainly about moving image. Now it's about still, like every shoot we do stills and motion.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going out and doing websites and
no. Digital campaigns, content. Series for online. Yeah, it's constantly changing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Is there something that you want to integrate into that over time or do you feel like you've found your happy place and it's a matter of going out there and doing more?
I always say that what Tiny Disco is today is not what it's going to be in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working in such a fast-paced, constantly changing, algorithm-driven space. I think like a year ago I swore I'd never do TikTok content. Now I'm hiring a full-time TikToker. So here we are. I think a repeating theme from our clients is that traditional agencies are quite rigid in their approach. Obviously, they're very busy. They've got large accounts. There's a lot of processes, a lot of people things have to go to. Whereas I'm like, if my client wants to talk to my junior art director about the tablecloth that's going on a shoot, they can call them up. Like we're, I think I keep coming back to that word nimble, where we're fast. If a change needs to happen, or I'm just like, yeah, let's do it. Not like, I feel like a lot of clients kind of are dealing with maybe walls or boundaries or processes. And I've just broken all that down and it's very, I mean, it's good now because we're still smallish. Maybe that changes when we grow, but.
There's been a massive shift in the industry. I think I heard you and Lauren talking about Howardson & Co. But there has been I think, at least looking at it, a big shift towards independence. Like in the last, like pre-COVID, the dominant agencies were the holding companies. They still are, obviously, but there is no doubt that the independents are coming back with a vengeance. Like there's Thinkabell, I see more of your stuff. Howardson & Co. is, they're more like a traditional full service agency rather than a creative agency. Our friends down at Hard Hat, Dan Monheit, who's on the podcast, I reckon, four times a year.
Amazing. Hard Hat have like a whiskey bar.
Yeah.
Which Stu, my husband, is like, when we have a whiskey bar, we've made it. And I'm like, no one in our team drinks whiskey except you.
So, but Stu drinks whiskey?
He's made himself drink whiskey, I think, because we went to Hard Hat once and he was like, that whiskey bar is amazing.
That's hilarious.
Yes.
It's a beautiful bar, though.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really, really a very nice. Cool space.
That's so funny. Has Stu convinced himself, like, you know, he has to start drinking whiskey to be more suave type thing? Or has he actually gotten into it?
No, he has gotten into it. But I think, like, he's really taking on that ad man vibe. Like last week we had a meeting at 2 o'clock and he just brought a whiskey in and just poured out three glasses. And I was like,
okay,
I'll try, but I didn't like it. Like I'd prefer a neat little gin happening in there or something. Even like a craft beer.
Yeah. Yeah. Craft. I mean, it made me burp.
You did offer me a beer before.
I did before.
We should get some beer and make you burp. That'd
yeah,
be
yeah, we should have done
My
that.
3-year-old just discovered she can burp and it's so cute.
What is she like drinking to burp?
Nothing. Like she just does it randomly. Like she'll just be sitting there and then she'll do a massive gulp. Yeah.
What's the biggest insight you've learned about yourself having kids? Like do you find yourself being like quite the, is it like a mirror?
Oh, it's really cool. I think, and I absolutely, this has not changed since the minute my first child came out of me. That sounds really horrible. Literally, it was birthed out. I felt myself. So up until then, I didn't really know who I was.
Mm-hmm.
I had this kind of like flitting through the world, being cute, doing stuff, trying to like live the dream, which was kind of not really happening. And selfish, you know, you're really selfish before you have kids. And then as soon as I had Arthur, I was like, this is it. This makes sense. Like I have a purpose. You utterly, totally fall in love with that little person. And to round back to your question of is it a mirror? My son is me and my daughter is my husband, which is wild. So Arthur actually looks like me to the point where my mum spins out sometimes because he looks like me as a child.
Right.
And he is like a major bookworm like me. Like he just sits there and devours books. And he's only just turned 6 and he's like reading little novels. And he's got very similar, like we're very similar across the board. So yes, he is a mirror. And then I look at Audrey. And even when she was born, I was like, huh? And she looks like Stu and she is Stu. She doesn't sleep. Like she likes to stay up late. She's a party animal. She has FOMO. She likes to burp. She likes to eat everything. So yes, in our instance, it is like a mirror, but just not the other way around. Yeah, only with one.
Only with one.
I think it's actually trippy to look at your genetics and go, why? How did that happen? You know, like genetics is crazy.
Yeah.
You made a person that's then going to go on and do something in the world.
Yeah, it is weird. Like, And sometimes as well, like you look at some people and like, how did you come from that? Do you find that?
Yeah.
That's always weird. Like if you look at me, you can see my dad, but with my mum's colouring. You look at Lauren and her parents who we're catching up with tonight, I look at them, I go, what?
Mm-hmm.
But like their personality traits, absolutely. Mm. Like you can see elements of their personality traits.
Yeah.
And
really interesting as well in your position, because you're thinking about this idea of children.
Mm.
And then one day you'll have this person that you're going to know forever, but you don't yet know that person. Isn't that such a weird concept?
It's fucking wild.
And also further to that, they're going to change your world.
Mm.
And they're going to shape it and they're going to piss you off all the time.
Yeah.
But it's magical. Like there is nothing better.
Is there anything I should do more of before that little person comes in the next year or so? If it happens. Sleep?
Yes. Just sleep, all the sleep. Like the sleep never comes back. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, and I'm.
It's
many
gone
people
forever.
Said that
your
to
sleep
me.
Is fucked for the rest of your life.
So we sleep in a lot at the moment. A lot of our friends look at us like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?"
I would just love to sit in my bed on a Saturday morning and read a newspaper. Like no joke.
Yeah.
That is a dream of mine.
Yeah.
Do that. I mean, digital newspaper. Your magazines, whatever you read. I don't know what you read, but do more of that because you will never read on a morning again.
Have you and Stu had a time yet on your own, like a little mini holiday?
Yes. Bless my mum. When Arthur was born, the first thing she said to me was like, you need to still prioritize your relationship.
Mm.
And she actually said to me, you've got to teach that baby how to take a bottle. And it was the best thing I ever did because I have friends whose kids just never took a bottle, which means obviously you have to be there to feed them at all times. And sometimes you just need a break.
Yeah, right.
So I think Arthur had his first sleepover with my mum at 5 weeks old.
Yeah, right.
And that was such an awesome gift for her to give because you lose each other in that
the
parenting
parents,
gig.
I can't wait. One of the best things I can't wait for is the reaction of the parents. Like Lauren's dad, we're catching up with Lauren's parents
when
tonight.
You're pregnant?
No, when the kid comes along.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
We're catching up with Lauren's parents tonight. Her dad's a real only child. And he's always like, oh, kids. But you can tell the moment that
he
sees that kid, he'll fucking lose it.
He'll lose his mind. And you'll never forget that moment when they come in.
Because, again, TikTok, knowing me so well, is just nonstop feeding me the shit at the moment.
Well, you keep lapping it up too. You're just creating that whole thing.
I can't help myself. Thinking about, like, and this is before we get into our rapid fire, your way of absorbing creative exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's asked you in the past about muses. Where do you get your inspiration from? And you say everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But is there a source that you keep coming back to and going, yeah, fuck yeah, like that is so sick?
Like a creative inspiration.
Yeah.
Lots of, for me
right now, it is just consistently TikTok.
Oh, yeah. TikTok's got a lot to answer for. I am very influenced by fashion magazines, to be honest.
Okay.
Like I when I get that magazine and I just like like have a little sip in
it. I know that feeling. I like fresh paper,
that
right?
That fresh paper.
Yeah.
Fashion mags, huge. A lot of online publications. So like when it comes to video, New Yorker and New York Times, exceptional video content. Mm. Like, and I'm a news gal, so I like a story. No, I really do get it from everyone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's a very vague.
Instagram is quite amazing for that.
Well, Instagram, but I just think, how did we function before it? I've got about 30,000 folders full of inspiration.
Don't know about you, though. I've sort of like Instagram, I'm turning off the constant recommendation of things that I want to see that aren't really on point.
Isn't that
But the baby
stuff's on point, right? Okay.
But like I'm happy to receive that on TikTok.
Yes.
On Instagram, I want to see
your
aesthetically
friends.
Nice things, friends, all that sort of stuff. I'm going there for inspiration, I guess.
Yeah.
Pinterest?
I love Pinterest.
Could do that.
But Pinterest is, you got to work that algorithm. And once you strike gold, it's like Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
Once you work it hard and you get past the weird stuff, and the cacti and the weird, yeah, you find gold on Facebook Marketplace. Yeah. And then you keep finding gold.
Well, like I, with Pinterest, we had our wedding, you know,
mood board.
Just for people like coming as guests, like, oh, what do we wear? I'm like, okay, here's examples. But
did you Pinterest board outfit examples?
Lauren did, yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, people were asking.
What?
So they wanted to know what, like,
formal. Who are these people?
Boomers.
Wait, what was your wedding? Was it an abstract wedding, like on a rooftop or something?
No, it was just a.
People need to know what to wear to a wedding.
Yeah.
That's really
interesting. They need to know if they need to wear a tie.
Did you not put a dress code on?
We did. Apparently. Apparently it was very difficult.
They wanted to do the right thing, right?
Yeah, which
is why
was
they
nice.
Asked. That comes from a good place.
Actually, the wedding, when I think about it, I can understand because the wedding happened in April 2021 where we'd just all come out of lockdowns.
So people didn't know how to socialize either, right?
Yeah.
They probably didn't know what to wear, like didn't have clothes.
Yeah, they're like, oh, do I wear a tie? Don't I? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, interesting.
So the thing that got recommended to me because I'm really into it is bonsai. I've got like 12, 13 at home.
This is interesting.
That was the thing on.
This is fascinating.
Now I need to get back into Pinterest because then I can start to find my bonsai. But, you know.
I can wholeheartedly say I've never met anyone who cares for, tends to, owns bonsai. Do you have to like trim them? How big are we talking?
So you do stuff seasonally. They're big. I've got some that are like 50 years old.
That could be worth some money, Jake.
They are. They are worth money. The guy that I – so there's a nursery –
It's not just like the Bunnings one for $5 you get.
Fuck no.
Okay.
We're talking like –
respect to you.
A big fucking like maple tree. Or like I've got an olive tree bonsai that's like 20 years old.
Isn't the concept of like shrinking a tree and keeping it real small kind of weird?
I literally watched a video about this the other night where a biologist said like, is this torture?
Yeah, you're torturing a tree that could be giving oxygen to the world.
Yeah, it's not.
Instead, it's giving micro oxygen.
I'll send you a video after. You do to them is what they experience in the wild anyway.
Where?
Anywhere.
Tiny town.
Yeah. In a town for ants?
Where is this place?
Echuca.
And yeah, okay. Fair. Okay. I don't know who that guy is. He doesn't sound like he's backed by science or biology.
He's a biologist, man. He said it was
no,
fine.
He's a YouTube clown.
Yeah, he's a YouTube clown. I'll send you the clip. You can tell me
okay,
if I'm
I also
you.
Am interested in the bonsai. Send me the pictures.
I'll send you some photos.
Do they have names?
No.
You got to name your bonsai.
Bob,
if
Sally.
You're torturing something, you got to name it.
Okay, I'll give them names just for you. And I'm going to do it tonight. I'm going to take
unicorn,
stories.
Princess.
I'll give them names that are like based on where they're from in the world. So like the olive one, I'll call him like Stavros.
Okay, cute. Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
All right, we need to do your rapid fire questions. Okay.
Ready.
Best prop that you've purchased under $200.
Well, that's not even a rapid fire question because you asked me that before.
Okay.
Best is purchase. This a real podcast? Okay.
Hey, you don't laugh.
You're not paid to laugh, Jacob. Sorry.
Let's go best purchase under $200.
This is a great question.
Yeah.
Wait, prop or just purchase?
Anything.
Okay. In a work sense, in the office.
I don't know. It could be an iPad. Could be anything at home. Could be a fashion magazine. Yeah, stumped you, didn't
fashion
it?
Magazines aren't under $20. That's well,
no, $200.
$200, sorry. Yeah, right. Okay. No, I actually think it's the treadmill in our office.
Yeah, this treadmill is a pink 1980s looking.
You need
thing.
To put a photo up. Ding.
Yeah. Jacob get Leif to put it in there.
It's so iconic. Like you could never. When we did this campaign for Dan's Daily, I like wrote this stupid idea about a model walking on a treadmill reading a menu because the brief was just be crazy, make stupid stuff happen, but make it look cool. And I was like, model on a treadmill is really cool. And then I was like, what if we could find a hot pink treadmill? And my team were like, ooh, like that's not possible, Chelsea. Chelsea's being crazy again. And then my producer Kate was like, I just found a hot pink treadmill on Facebook Marketplace for $150.
Yeah, right. This is where that comes in.
It was covered in mud. And
so
she had to
it?
Scrub it down.
Wow.
It's fine. She does a lot of things for me, that girl. She's amazing.
Okay. Best, what's like been your go-to item in the fridge at home lately?
Do you know what? I haven't really opened my fridge this week.
Who cooks between you two?
Oh, I hate cooking.
I love cooking.
I hate cooking. Can you come cook for me? Because I hate it. My go-to item in the fridge, like my drink bottle.
Okay.
Like I don't.
Your water bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I only eat breakfast at home at the moment. It's really sad. Sorry, these answers are terrible. It's a pity we don't have
this. We've got this client who we're selling at the moment. I think we'll get it. It's like a sort of, you know, they're going with the whole flexitarian vibe. Mm-hmm. They're like, it's like frozen meals that you find at IGA. They're like really nice veggie meals.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking like, oh, it could be that. But we still don't have it as a client yet.
Oh, as in that would be my go-to thing.
Yeah. I'm just trying to take
definitely
the
not.
all right. Last one.
Mm-hmm.
Doco or movie you've been watching of late or TV show?
I've gone back to The Sopranos.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Because I've never watched it before.
I've never watched it as well and it just got recommended.
It's very good. Back on that, I just was craving some, you know, I did the Euphoria thing and I felt damaged. And I couldn't watch it all because I was like, Rue, this is making me feel sick. I've got kids. Have you watched it?
I haven't, but it's I love Sydney Sweeney. And she's amazing in White Lotus. And
White Lotus is so
fucking
good.
Fucking epic.
The thing is, I don't. It's so funny because I played that title scene to my team yesterday and I was like, this is iconic.
That was the inspiration for this podcast we produced for Spotify. The guy was like, one of the talent was like, I want White Lotus intro.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Just so much about that show is so wrong.
Really good.
So we've just started actually, we don't really get to watch that much because I'm pretty much working every night at the moment.
Same.
But I also recently watched, it was a doco about a religion, like a religious cult.
It sounds like you watch a lot of binge.
I don't know what we have on that TV. There's a lot going on. It must be
because if you're watching Euphoria, Succession, Sopranos, I'm pretty sure it's binge.
It's all on binge.
Yeah.
Stu just makes a recommendation and then he puts it on. So I think we're regularly like bouncing around all those things.
Yeah, yeah. Because I've got a lot of those as like saved as favorites and they're all on the same thing.
Keep Sweet and Pray. That's what it was called.
Keep Sweet and Pray.
It's really messed
up. Yeah, I think I remember this as recent, published recently.
Yeah,
about a cult.
It's pretty gross.
American. Yeah.
And also Louis Theroux. Like, I could watch every Louis Theroux episode again and again. Same with Seinfeld.
Louis Theroux's amazing, particularly after that sound clip from TikTok.
Iconic.
I just don't know, like, where to find most of his stuff.
It's on ABC iView.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it must be like a BBC thing.
It's really good.
Anyway.
Is that all the questions?
That's all the questions.
Oh.
Chelsea, thank you so much for coming
in.
Thank
you for having me.
Where can people find you if they haven't already on the interwebs?
We don't have a website, which makes it hard.
Okay.
I'm getting a website. That's happening. But our Instagram is probably the best.
Yeah.
It's just Tiny Disco. Plain and simple.
And you're Chelsea Morley?
Yeah.
That's me. On Instagram?
Instagram?
Are you going to divulge your TikTok profile yet?
No.
Okay.
I started it in spectacular fashion and then I didn't do anything with it.
You need to tell me afterwards because I'm going to spam you with content.
Okay. Baby content, apparently.
Baby content. Chelsea, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been fun.
Thank you so much for checking out this episode. If you liked it, do subscribe and, of course, like it on YouTube if you're watching as well. We'd really appreciate that. For audio, if you've not already listening on your podcast app, you can search for it on any good app, including Spotify, Pocket Casts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc. For video, if you're not watching, you can search Uncommon Podcast on YouTube. It's the first one that appears every single time. For behind the scenes, do follow us on Instagram and TikTok. It's @uncommon_show. But until next time, thanks for tuning in.